Good morning and welcome to Family Life. Your host, Shalima Muhammad, and Dr. Nadia Muhammad. Dr. Muhammad may join us later in the month as she is participating in ongoing community activities, specifically a trial study for tax immunotherapeutic to COVID-19. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent, Rob Speaks. This man, Lord, have money and esteem in the name of the Lord, the most gracious, most merciful. I greet the listening audience and the peace of Assalamu Alaikum. This week, discussion continues with the series of Keeping Up With Your Mental Health. Our distinguished guest and subject matter expert, Sister Rashida Muhammad. Sister Rashida is the wife of our sponsor, Mulan Muhammad, a researcher of many subjects, specifically of health, national, and international affairs. Sister Rashida's career, background, incorporates expertise in domestic and international banking. She studied at Rutgers University in business management with a minor in accounting. She also served M&M Sports as an administrative assistant and boxing promoter and entrepreneur, Mulan Muhammad. Sister Rashida is forever grateful to the most honorable Elijah Muhammad and his son, Imam Warthuddin Muhammad. May Allah be pleased with him for their teachings enable her to succeed in many areas of her personal life and working relationships. Sister Rashida, again, welcome.
Salamu alaikum. Thank you for having me as a guest today.
Today, Sister Rashida, we're continuing our mental health series. And you're going to speak specifically about some subject areas. First, let's start with prepping for propaganda. What does that initialize? What does it mean? And how does it affect population?
Well, propaganda is something that is invisibly utilized and is psychologically embraced by many people, and they haven't an idea of exactly what is the ulterior motive of the propaganda, but they may embrace it or they may discard it. The definition of propaganda is a mode of communication that is used to manipulate or influence the opinion of groups to support a cause or belief, and it can be biased and misleading. So, you look at the overwhelming impact of propaganda, especially utilized by the media. If you have a parent that reads you, your first exposure, understanding words is when you're reading to a child when they're a little child, because they're going to ask you about the pictures in the book and what does that word mean, and you're explaining to them what the story is about, and, oh, yes, the wolf, he tried to eat that little girl. So you're showing the child that that animal has achieved to fear that child. I'm just using this as an example. However, it's psychologically, the child is taking it from another perspective. Consciousness of propaganda, 90% of the time, is unconscious. Selena?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh,
you proceed. Yes, mm-hmm. You proceed.
Propagandists has a specified goal or set of goals. To achieve these, they deliberately select facts, arguments, and displays of symbols and present them in ways they think will have the most effect. The maximum effect they may distort pertinent facts or simply lie, And then they try to divert the attention of the reactors, the people they are trying to sway, from everything but their own propaganda. So in that instance, if we just stop and take, you see, okay, if you see a flashing sign and it says stop, you're going to stop. But if you're come to a stop sign and it's in the opposite, you're not going to stop. And a lot of times that's the manner in which propaganda affects us. We see it, we understand it, we nourish it, and we have the right to discard it or to embrace it. And it is a form of psychology. It's psychological warfare that involves the spreading of information and ideas to advance a cause or discredit an opposing cause. So to be prepared for that, you have to know propaganda. And to know propaganda, you have to take the facts of that which is being disseminated and research it. And most people don't have the time to do that. Most people don't see the significance of doing that. However, in every facet of our lives, it is really necessary to get to the bottom of what is the absolute truth that you can live with. There's a truth, and then you have conditionals. Some you can, some you can't. But that's up to the individual, because that's why we have free will. But when it comes to someone saying, oh, take this, take three of these in the morning and you're going to feel better, and the morning wakes up and you don't really feel better, then you have to stop and say, well, I wonder why I didn't feel better. Well, perhaps I did this or perhaps I did that. And a lot of times it's the lack of information thereof we embrace as being the truth, and we really don't even understand whether it's true or false. And so in preparing for it, we basically have to do the research. You have to advocate for yourself, you have to advocate for your family, and you have to advocate for your fellow men.
You bring up a very important point. I'm going to narrow the subject down a little bit. Where would you say propaganda begins? I say it begins in our schools. A thought process.
Mm-hmm.
To capture the minds of our youth. And as parents, how do we intercede that information on a daily basis?
Absolutely. Because, again, the child is in the stages of learning. So as it goes through those stages and phases of learning, you're feeding it certain information, preferably established by the so-called society, how we raise our children. And then it goes according to cultural norms and language, and you have a whole lot of, still have a whole lot of dynamics there. And in just the overall society, where we also take our cues from what's right, what's wrong, what's acceptable, what's objected to, that also is fed to our children. So where we have inside the domains of our home influence over our children, we don't have that same influence. We pray we have that influence over our children, but then they are going to be affected by those cues that are outside of their home environment. Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely, because what that is called is participatory propaganda. So it starts with a socialization process, and then it internalizes into conflict, which essentially states, I started out here, but it's going against what I'm being taught, what my foundation is, with regard to my primary relationships, my family, my friends. So then I have a conflict or belief system that's based on that new propaganda. You know, there's so much propaganda going on even about COVID-19, and I just want to mention that momentarily. One life lost, and there's various surveillance systems, you know, that record the life loss of, you know, COVID-19, and specifically the vaccines, as it doesn't react in a positive manner to some immune systems. And one life lost. You know, so there's enough information out there for people to read and research and make a decision on their own. We're not here to tell you to go left or right,
right,
but we are saying that there's information out there and you need to read it so that you can make an informed decision. And I think that's another challenge when it comes to propaganda. You mentioned a few minutes ago, and you look at the tools that proliferate propaganda, which changes relationships between those reading it and those affected by it. And as a result, and that could be through social media, that could be through so many factors. You know, the emergence of the internet, you know, smartphones, applications, all types of things. So we say, okay, let's isolate this. Let's find out where this is coming from and how do we rewire it all. And I looked at an article the other day, and it's becoming such a challenge. And going back to the pandemic, people are getting such anxiety, you know, from the isolation and having to be with themselves. And the article stipulated, and I thought it was extremely good, is that it stipulated as far as rewiring propaganda. Because that's exactly what this article did. It said, you know, when you're trying to disseminate so much, you know, a conundrum of information at a given time, don't process it all.
Right.
Don't look at the news before you go to bed at night. And that was me. I'm going to be very transparent. I said, oh, let me just see what's going on. That was not having a positive effect. They said, stop it immediately. So I said, oh, they're speaking to me. Stop it immediately. Because the news is going to be there in the morning. And you can process it better in the morning than you can at night. and it's so true because I would have these weird dreams. I wouldn't necessarily think about it, but if I read a particular news, I have a dream about it. So it just affects you. I'm not worried about it. I'm not thinking about it consciously. And you mentioned it, Sister Rashida. You said it has subliminal or subconscious effects on us. So they said, get rid of the news at night. I stopped immediately. They said, process it in the morning. I said, this is a good idea. This is some good information here. And take time to have short meditation, no matter what you do throughout the day. If you work from home, take an hour lunch, don't take a half an hour lunch, because that gives you a chance to inhale and exhale to breathe. These are some of the suggestions. If you could speak on this for a few moments.
Well, listening to the news does have a tendency, and being a news junkie does have a tendency to be one of my passions. I like to read about international and national news, but I also can sit and listen and say, where did he get that from? And the average person, if they're busy dealing with their daily norms, they really don't stop and look at what's being said to you. Maybe if someone is murdered or fell or, you know, won some money or this or that, but the overall story does not really psychologically hit them. Within the disseminating of information back and forth between the newscaster and the recipient of that information. And it's designed to get your attention, and it's designed also to stay in your subconscious, too. Now, you say you can go to sleep, and when you go to sleep, it's there. It can possibly be there. Just the mind hearing it or something that you read still lay on the subconscious. And that's why it's so important to, I know in some of the information from health that I've read, it was saying that 2 hours before you go to bed, that you should eliminate the television. You shouldn't sleep with it, especially with the television in your room, in a bedroom. And you should try to eliminate being in front of a television an hour before you go to bed so that you could free yourself of that which you were in the first place, that story, that news. And you might not even have watched it. You might have been asleep in front of it. But it still can, if you are subconscious, it still can go into your subconscious mind. And I believe they discovered that in when they were doing some experiments in torture, what laid in the person's subconscious mind, were they able to elicit it from them?
Done critically during the World War II times. Absolutely, some of these studies were undertaken during that time and before, but, you know, they became more advanced during that time. You're absolutely correct.
And again, propaganda is designed to spread the adoption of ideas regardless of its truth, and always in a one-sided manner. When you look at some of the best opinion pieces used for facts and coherent arguments to explain why we should agree with the position, propaganda has a wide variety of definitions. The most important elements of propaganda are that it speaks to our fears and our insecurities,
mm-hmm.
and it distorts and manipulates facts and information. Then that, you're actually a person from unbeknownst to them, and again, you referred that to the pandemic. I'm saying the same thing with the pandemic. Once you do some research on some of the language that they're using mm-hmm. to instill fear and apprehension in you without even thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like you're just doing it as an automatic response instead of stopping and saying, wait a minute. After a while, something has to come full circle. So if you look at the contradictions, and they're contradicting, plenty of contradictions, you don't get worse. And you apply methods that's supposed to help you get better, but you're getting progressively worse. Something's wrong here. Because where is the properties that they're utilizing to assist in eliminating the cause in the first place? And if you stop and think about let's just take the common cold. If you get a common cold, you have a runny nose, eyes might run, might have a little, all of the above or just one or two. But the wise person isn't going to wait until they get absolutely can't even get out of the bed, can't lift their head off the pillow before they address it. They're going to address, they should, from a cautionary perspective, they should address it when they first see it. But now you have an invisible disease. You don't know if it's airborne. First it was molecules in the air. Now it's airborne. But if you wipe out off any, if you use any antibacterial and wipe off the cart that you're going into the store with, if it's airborne, the germs are going right back on that cart. Am I correct or am I wrong?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we're germs. We're matter. So we've been here for millions of years and have still sustained catastrophes. But for a person to say that you have to wipe everything down, use this antibacterial on your hand, that is going to make you more contagious than the next person because you wipe bacteria off your hand. There's a normal portion of the body that our mouth has bacteria in it, our ears have bacteria in it, our private parts have bacteria in it. So we consist of bacteria. And it's our job to keep it clean and keep it in good operating condition. But when you tell someone you have to wipe everything down with antibacterial, Lysol, or bleach, and this or that, you've opened yourself to a source greater than what you had when you left the bacteria there.
It's interesting you say that because when I started teaching in the public schools, I started catching everything. I just would never, maybe I would get under the weather once a year. And then when I started teaching in schools, it was every other week, literally. And so with the smaller children, they, before we went to lunch, we would have them use the hand sanitizers and the antibacterial. And to your point of it being reintroduced to the environment, you know, daily, you have so many children ill with the flu or the common cold, you know, during that particular season, and they have been from December through April, and that constant going back into the environment. So I had a personal experience when I first started. I would use the hand sanitizer, and I didn't have any gloves on, and I would constantly get sick. So I created a scientific study for me. And I said, well, I keep getting sick. You know, because the airborne is going back, you know, and so forth. But my hands was helping it contribute back on surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I purchased these particular gloves, and I started using the gloves, you know, to distribute the hand sanitizer, and to do certain cleanings in the classroom. However, here's the thing. When the flu season came in, the classrooms had to be steam clean because if they weren't steam clean, you would have, you know, staphylococcus and different things grow. Once that grew, that just went everywhere. And you had to close a specific area of the school down, they have studied in the gym or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I started using the gloves, you know, when working with the children, and it made my life that much better. So we are reintroducing bacterium, and it's called cross-contamination. It's called cross-contamination back into the air that we're using. So you're right, we have to be very, very careful and be very knowledgeable of what we're doing. And we have to wear the mask going into certain establishments, but truly they should be thrown away right away.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, because this, what you're speaking of is just scientifically true. Propaganda you know, it is biased. It is misleading nature to promote or publicize a particular political cause. That is your definition.
Right.
And I remember this, you know, during the early 1800s, you had Thomas Edison, and we were looking at this documentary, and you had different individuals, you know, who used the electrical waves to support voice. You know, now we create the telephone. I mean, it was used for different things. However, people who invested in the stock market at the time didn't want to promote that because they didn't know what the outcomes were going to be. I mean, look where we are now. We have smartphones. We have, you know, it's just amazing. But you back during the 1800s, you had, so that propaganda began years ago to promote a particular political cause. So because my political cause cannot see into the future, I'm going to discredit your cause, effective of the outcomes that may be proving that my approach is going to be more extensive in services to the population. Research also depicts that, or they say, when you start researching propaganda, that it begins in the home. What do you think about that, Sister Rashida?
It begins in the home?
Yes. What do you think about that?
Yeah, because you're the first teacher. It actually begins in the womb. It begins in that blood clot.
Yes, ma'am.
For the different genes of the genes of the genes of the genes. Well, you're hereditary.
Of course, is
made up in your genes. So the behavior then, once that embryo is grown and it pushes its way out into the outer world, at this point in time is when they easily influence and easily not influence. Because they're getting their own mind, and the first thing they're going to tell you is, no, you need to get a bus in 10 minutes, and they're telling you they can button their coat themselves.
So true.
You're trying to be patient, but then you have to stop and show them the correct way to do it and consistently do it until they can do it readily, more readily themselves. However, you can also say, now, if you go over there, Fido's going to bite you, so I don't want you to go over there because he's a mean doggy. And they're looking at you like, yeah, right, so they go over there. So you couldn't impart that propaganda in them that dog is going to bite because they see that dog in a human relationship with you. So they're taking their cues from your actions, from what you're doing, not what you're saying. So that's why if when you're looking at that propaganda and you're saying, well, you think about, I think about my sisters, my younger brother and sister, how they used to use a lot of propaganda to get certain little pennies to go to the store. But it was always that they did something or can I do this? And something that I did, they would run and say that they did it. And my grandma would believe them. And they tell me, well, why would they tell me a lie? She didn't say lie. Why would they tell a story? And I'm like, my mouth is open. Because you believe them. Why else? Was it me? They told you the story. I'm coming to tell you the truth. But I keep saying, but I'm telling the truth. But I just want to know, why would they tell me a story? There's no way I can explain it to you why you believe what they said. So in that home that you live by example, and you also live by what you say, and it can be just contradictory,
which causes another type of problem.
So is that
excuse me. It dates back. You know, we're talking about, I mean, we're going beyond 1588, and the Spanish propaganda to coincide with the Queen's language, the Queen Elizabeth's language of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Language. The language. Did not you start the show speaking about the language? And so here we have sightings, historical sightings, that speaks of Queen Elizabeth of the time, because there's many Queen Elizabeths, but this is specifically of 1588, language that was used in combination with the Pope's language to direct a certain behavior from population,
yes,
to support their political views.
Agenda. And that's what is utilized to this very day in our language. They call it organic law. However, the foundations and the definitions of those languages came from the Vatican and the Church of England.
Yeah.
And they utilized that in describing who was and who is and who's functioning and who is not even to be considered human. And they came to this land and established that same premise here.
Absolutely.
That propaganda that they utilized and said, well, we're a diversified group and we're all going to hold hands and roast marshmallows and sing kumbaya around the campfire, but you have to have willing participants. And most of the time, based upon these think tanks, and I've been doing a lot of reading on them, and I'm not appalled at it because I've known it for decades, but the fact that they actually shape and mold the level and the path that we travel. And we think it's ourselves, but they're setting the mold. You could do this, you could do that. You can't go down the street. You have to go down that street. Oh, well, that street is now closed. Now you have to make a left turn. Oh, that's a stop sign on that street. And we just acquiesce to it. Well, you don't have anything else, and this is what we're doing right now in our life.
It's interesting. We're going to pause here. The show is brought to you by New Africa Excellent and Ron Speaks. Modern day. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, in paraphrasing, something is going to greatly affect our communities. And he was speaking specifically, as he called it, the one-eyed monster.
Mm-hmm.
You know where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
And that's our television, our media.
Mm-hmm.
You just spoke about think tanks. Let's talk about that advertisement and how that, you know, changed. Let's use women, for example. Changed our dress. You know how the dress kept getting shorter and shorter and shorter. Let's talk about how that vision of propaganda changed society through televised advertisements. If you can elaborate on that for a few minutes.
Well, the basic appeal was sex. Because you're seeing something that previously was forbidden to you, so now it's like a little temptation. You're only going to get to see. Remember, they used to have in a lot of the older movies. I'm older than you, but a lot of the older movies, the women were very, very feminine. They had these long gowns out, and oh, they were flowing, but they always had a slit up to their knee.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was teased. then they started having the slits on their sides and the V in the front. And then they started raising up, and I know all this because I sew. And then they began to design them so that they fit the straight skirt. That's what we used to call a straight skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then straight skirt came out. Well, the straight skirt, remember, we didn't wear pants in school, so we wore skirts. And then that began to rise as you were in high school. You got in, your pleated skirt came to your knee, a little below the knee, which is knee socks on. But then that began to rise. But the whole essence of it and the reason for it is there's a pleasure there. Is our pleasure because we're doing something that we are not, we couldn't do previously, or our parents couldn't do. And the men from that era seeing things that they didn't see in their era, and more than what was allotted to them, and the younger ones are seeing even more. So it's just because there has never been a level of understanding and acceptance of decent appearance and what mm-hmm. constitutes decent appearance versus just immoral appearance, that you're dressed to tantalize someone, capture someone's attention, and how that's so superficial because it's just like you see a toy in a store and it only has a dress and a hat and a wig on, and underneath when you get it falls right apart in your hand. So bottom line is that the propaganda there that they're utilizing is this is good for you. And remember when they did come out with those, they used to have the Pepsi Cola and the Coca-Cola girls
mm-hmm.
with the bottle, and you know that looks so. They had the little and in my day when it was teenagers, they wore pleated skirts and wool sweater with this little collar. I don't know if it was angora or fur around the collar of their wool sweater. And that was the girl drinking Coca-Cola. And then, oh, she has a shape like a Coca-Cola bottle. How would you know that?
Mm-hmm.
So when we're looking at it, the importance that we put on that physical appearance has been the catalyst at this point for the undressing of the female.
Yes, and I think you're right, sex. It's a multi-billion-dollar business. I used to mentor some of the young women in high school, my daughter's high school, on various topics, and some of them were preparing to travel overseas. And so there's a series of classes that you have to attend to travel overseas. And my daughter had the option either to go overseas or to have a C-16. She decided it was C-16, but some other friends decided to go overseas. And when they came back, you know, from Europe, said, we'll be so excited about it. And they explained the different things that they saw, how wonderful it was, but they said at the end it was very distasteful. And I said, well, what do you mean? They give you classes on how to dress overseas because you're going to be visiting museums and, you know, you're going to be around that country's population, both elder and younger, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a dress code, a decorum. So some of the American groups met with the foreign groups and they toured the country, et cetera, et cetera. And then other American groups were coming from other parts of the country. And so the young lady explained, she said, well, the other American groups that came from various parts of the country, they were very disappointing. And people just stopped and stared at them. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, the clothing, it was despicable. She said they had shorts above their buttock line. They were showing their buttock line. and they could not go into certain businesses because they were dressed that way. And my position was like, you're kidding me, right? And this young lady, you know, just so embarrassed. She said, we were all so embarrassed. In whichever areas they came from of different parts of the country, they were educated just like everyone else because you're going to this particular, you know, area. You're going to the cemetery. Whatever the case may have been, you should be dressed accordingly. And they came with shorts above their buttocks, so they go into certain areas. I was like, oh, my gosh, you don't think there's not a decorum around the world, even though you see certain things. There is a decorum, people. Absolutely. A decorum of accepted modesty. And that was both for the women and men. It wasn't, you know, just for the women, but the men as well. They didn't want the young males having rags around their head. You know, some of the things that they, you're not getting up out of bed. You are going into society, you're going into a foreign society, so you should represent yourself best possible. It wasn't just, you know, directed towards young women, but men as well. That becomes so key, you know, that we must have consciousness.
They sent it through the music also.
Yes.
And when I was researching on, well, I had looked this up previously, but I was researching on one particular one couple that I've always heard about and read about, and that was the Brookings Institute. And I was like, well, what makes the Brookings Institute so great? I had no idea that the Brookings Institute contributed to the creation of the UN.
Woo!
And I'm like, wow, that's where this is coming from. And because when I saw the job of a think tank, a term denoted to a group of people who are paid to do nothing but read, discuss, think, and write, usually to address and redress a matter of vital importance to humanity. All they have to do is research, 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 research. That's all they do. So they shape and mold ideas. Now, that's the Brookings Institute. Now, recently I had read that the UN Agenda 2035 is what this supposed Great Reset is supposed to be about. So I was trying to see, how did the UN become incorporated with a global agenda? Well, that's the answer right there.
Mm-hmm.
The Brookings Institute. The Brookings Institute. It's the Brookings Institute. It's the Heritage Foundation, the Pew Foundation, the Cato Institute, Trilateral Commission, and these are your biggies.
Hmm.
These are your biggies. They create policies that we just follow the pattern that's set for us, and we don't bother the questions. Because when someone says, well, what are you going to do? What can you do about it? Well, you can make it known that you people understand and share the truth about the matter, but then my truth might not be your truth according to where you are being fed your information from.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, it's very difficult to convey something's going to happen that you're not really going to like, and it's going to impact such as it's going to, and it might affect you financially, or you have 25 million people who are on the verge of being homeless. They don't have a job. Or
mm-hmm.
They haven't paid rent.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't paid mortgages. Their businesses are closed. A lot of them in the midst of selling houses. That's not the 25 million that are collecting unemployment or on a waiver for paying their rent or their mortgages. But the impact of this is greater than people really are contemplating that it's going to be, because it's not in their backyard. And when you look at those who set those policies, it ain't just those who used to, as the constituent that you elect up there, they got another or string pulling them too, trust me. Because they have the lobbyists, they have the donations from to their campaigns from the corporations and all of those influential individuals and corporate and businesses. So they're not
just, absolutely.
They're not just there in their own right. They may have to, you know, oh, well, everybody has to dance to the music every now and then. However, if you don't, they're going to ostracize you. So the bottom line is do you play until you get cash or do you just go along to get along? But those think tanks are very, very relevant in understanding what is going on in the nucleus of our society today.
So when we talk, when you spoke about the shifting of the UN, let's talk about that a little bit more.
You know, the UN was created supposedly with all X amount of nations. I don't remember from my understanding. I think right now they counted 192 that are supposed to be sided with this agenda for the Great Reset, so to speak. But it consists of countries that are supposed to come together and air their policies and their ills and have diverse discussions in of avoiding wars. It doesn't seem like that works. In the suffering and underdeveloped and of other countries and help them to develop. It doesn't seem like that's materialized. And because at the helm of it is the United States. That's the booking. When I was reading this last week, I was like, wow, that's very important. That is since 1918, and usually they say after the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always read that since the First World War, they have been working to bring to fruition exactly what's transpiring now, because a lot of that was foundation of by the very families that are in control now, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Morgans. I mean, I can go on and on. John D. Rockefeller, he was the one who prevented the chemists from utilizing holistic health and went into pharmaceutical and made it a law. Because why? Not because it made you better, but because it made him richer.
Yes. Stop right there. Because with your, oh gosh, this is so fantastic, international banking background.
Oh, that's sad. It makes me cry sometimes, but
give us a brief view of how all of this correlates with international banking.
Well,
and who gets richer?
Well, the primary foundation for banking is supposed to be the assistance in growth and development. If you don't have ulterior motives. If you have ulterior motives, and so to speak, you have something that I want, and I don't want to pay for it, so I'm going to get it some kind of way. So you go in, and this is what is done. They go in, they have very manicured appearances and patients, and they put all of the agreements on the table. And at this instance, they're just learning what your immediate needs are. So if they're in a country, and what are you going to do to secure it? So the country says, okay, I'm just saying hypothetically. Okay, we need $100 million, and we're willing to put up a quarter of our goal. Okay. So they know that they don't have the machinery and the farmland to produce, to pay that loan off, that principal. And the industries aren't such that they would be overwhelming, because at this point they are more social or embrace socialism than they do conservatism or whatever, because it's generated, you bring it in, you sell at the market, you pay the government, and you go home. Now, that's out. Now it's, okay, in order for you to pay me back faster, well, I can't pay anything but the loan. I can't pay anything but the interest. Well, in order for me to pay you back, for you to pay me faster, we're going to bring you in some, we're going to bring you in some machinery for your farmland. So that corporation comes in. Mm-hmm. And that corporation now is going to be over who gets what and how much. So they can't pay that interest. They can only pay the interest. They can't pay the principal. When they can't pay that principal, they turn around and say, okay, give me your gross national product as a payment on the principal. Now, if their gross national product is, let's say, their corn in Mexico, or oil, sweet crude, give me your gross national product, and we'll play it towards the principal. And since you don't seem to be able to really pay your principal back the way you should, we're going to privatize certain industries. So they destabilize you right there. And then in the interim, they are building up an adversary to the established government, which causes them to sell arms to both sides. And then they ease back and they look at the turmoil and they're saying, well, we actually won, but we don't know why he's still in office and he shouldn't be out of office, so we're going to place sanctions on you. So you can't get medicines, you can't get this, you can't get that, and you have to pay back that loan. So they bring them in, not whether they're gullible or desperate or whatever the case, the churns might be beneficial at that point in time, but they use that rhetoric and that propaganda to bring them in, embrace them, and then say, now let's see you get out of this problem. And when you're, most of the land outside of Western culture, most of the lands outside of Western culture are just inundated with wealth. So everything that is needed, instead of, as the Lost Point of Allah says to us, he made his nations and tribes to know one another, not despise one another. They can't utilize the system of humanity because they came with ulterior motives from day one. And that's, people might not agree with this, but that's kind of clocked in your genes. If you say that a person doesn't look like you, doesn't think like you, doesn't breathe like you, doesn't believe as you do, doesn't talk like you, they are considered savages and pagans, then that establishes their inferiority right there. And since then, they carry that mindset. And that mindset is how they conduct their business. Someone just told me the other day, I needed to study the First World War, because you will find out, if you want to know about America, study the First World War. And then study the depression. And you will see what's happening right now unfolding right in front of your eyes.
It's interesting you bring this up in studying economics. It came up in that particular subject matter, your very example. And they gave an example, and certainly that was South America. You mentioned Mexico and the corn and other South American countries who took out these types of loans, could not pay back, et cetera, et cetera. And now we have all kinds of problems that resulted through that exchange because there was initially some ulterior motives.
And even if they try, they're still circumvented from doing so because they don't want them to be successful in front of the eyes of their countrymen, fellow countrymen, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So there always has to be, I call it the invisible enemy. You know, like China, the country we love to hate, but we're following right behind them.
Their footpath, exactly. So let me ask you this. When you have these interest loans and the principal, are they calling the loans? If they're not exactly calling the loan, or are they controlling the loan?
They rolled them over.
Oh. Can you explain that process a little bit?
Yes. Okay. Okay. So I loaned you $100 million. And you weren't able to pay on the principal. Interest of that loan would stay the same, or I might charge you a little more. And then if I charge you a little more, you have to put more collateral down. Well, if you don't have tangible collateral, then I'm going to either have to use your resources or I'm going to have to use your mineral wealth. So that could be gold, oil, gas, whatever case may be. But what they do is it's called a revolving credit agreement. Well, they have a revolving credit agreement, revolving credit loan, and then they just have a what they call a conventional commercial loan. And that's usually not really extended because very few people can meet those criteria for the loan. But they roll the $100,000 over for, say, another 10 years, hoping you're getting larger more. And you still can't pay that principal, and then you're paying down on the value of what they are extracting from whatever else you put up for collateral, which is named most of the time is your gross national product.
Mm-hmm.
So they're sucking you to death, basically. That's what they're doing.
And then how does that become a disadvantage to the one extending the loan, because it eventually boils and comes and wars create. How does that become a disadvantage?
Control. He who holds the gold rules.
Yes.
He owns the money, but he has basically, you're going to sell off your public domain, and just what they're doing in the Amazon right now.
Yes.
That's a good example. What they're doing in Venezuela right now, what they're doing in the Amazon.
Yes.
They don't
yes.
care how the Amazon is a tropical nucleus for the southern part of the Americas and how that affects the environment. All they know is that they got timber and they have some, I don't know if they have sweet crude, but I know they have basically timber and something else they're in there for. And they're destroying. Because the president of Brazil allowed him to go in and do it because he has loans.
No, the tropics that's affecting the food change and all entities of life, not just human life, the animal life.
Yes, absolutely.
Place and control, the environment, everything, yes. Perfect example.
And it doesn't, see, we are the type of people until it doesn't affect you, until it's at your door.
Mm-hmm.
Or a loved one. But that conscience, and they're out there, the kids are out there, they're demonstrating. But think tank, think again. Remember, you have your infiltrators.
Mm-hmm.
All seeps in those demonstrations. And the purpose of it is to show them as their unreliable source of demonstration, and they're going to destroy.
So it is imperative to be in your conscious mind.
Absolutely.
We're going
and
to bring this
research
back.
For.
Yes.
When someone asks you a question, don't say when you go to the doctor. Don't just sit there, Some questions. And then when whatever he gives you, get up. And I just learned this the other day because I use PubMed for my research, that PubMed, which is, means public medicine, they have over 20 million published medical research journals, studies, abstracts, peer reviews, everything. You can ask them what is the effect of a pin being stuck in the arm, and you can find a study for it. You have to go to a doctor and have a back-and-forth conversation, not just going to sit in there and count your money. You're going to walk out of there and take a prescription that may be prescribed for your symptoms, not going to eliminate the very reason why you went there. So with that, even in contemplating that, it's the discipline eating, and they're not telling any business, it's telling you to wash your hands. Wash what you put in your mouth. More that crop, just eat all you want to, but just wash your hands or put some bacteria wipe on it, because that's the cure all. But they're not telling you stop eating that dried food. The quality of the oil that you're using, they would have probably wouldn't even have lasted 3 months had they really told the truth about the ways in which this would not have come to such a catastrophic of it's now airborne and you need 3 masks. I mean, you really need 3 masks, and that mask is preventing your natural air, the natural avenue by which you were created with, the inhale and exhale, and you're only making it injurious to your lungs by breathing that in. It's going to make you sicker. And they do the same things that they do with medication. Oh, this medication doesn't make me feel so good. Oh, I have a headache. Oh, I don't feel so good. Oh, the mask does the same thing. You have to ignore how that mask affects you in order to deal with it.
And so that gets us, I'm sorry, let me just say this, because before you go further, I want the listener audience to understand PubMed, Medline, the Scopus, these are scholarly articles. And what this essentially states is a criterion that researchers have to comply with in order to publish outcomes of research. And the outcomes of those research have to be done ethically. So we have these dynamics involved so that you can make a decision based on that information. And so, and I just want to note, you know, even some of the studies that are being done today on various fronts, the efficacy of those studies take years. So your PubMed and your Medline, and PubMed allows you to research various aspects of Medline, Ovid, and it gives you the scholarly analysis to determine the outcome of how a specific drug is used, supplement is used. You know, Sister Rashida, I was shocked. And the other day I read an article and they started to confiscate colloidal silver from the open market.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Because colloidal silver has been wanting on some fronts for years. This is nothing new. To take aspects of viral load.
Aspects of, I didn't catch your last word.
Aspects of viral loads.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You know, so now they're saying, oh, well, you people are professing that it cures people. How is not saying that it cures COVID-19. It's saying it can be a part of your supplement regimen. That is a big difference.
See the words? See that propaganda in that word?
Yes, ma'am, that language.
Yeah, they're saying
yes,
that book they said about, I forgot what I just read recently. They said that it could cure. And they said they never said that. They never said cure. They said it can be administered to assist in the remedying of COVID-19. They
yes.
say cure it. But that's what, that, again, those words, that they make wrong fair seem acceptable. So you accept it and you apply it. And then when the application doesn't turn out right, you wonder why, because there's free thought. And you have the ability to check further and read those little fonts. I don't know. I wonder if anyone reads those brochures that they attach on to their prescription. I guarantee you they don't.
They do not. It is so key. And what Sister Rashida is saying to this audience, this is so imperative, this is so important. Familiarize yourself with the language so that when you hear certain things, you can say, wait a minute, that doesn't coincide with what I read. But how can you challenge it if you don't understand aspects of the language? That language has to start changing your daily thought process. So what you put in is going to be a result of what you put out. So as you start learning about efficacy, you know, because scientific study is not 1,000% based on causation.
Right.
Except for cigarettes and lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
The direct correlation between lung cancer and smoking cigarettes is causation. They're going to come up with a p-value. That p-value is called significance. So that means in certain immune systems, I'm going to register a significant performance of a particular drug or not. And reality is, with regard to synthetic drugs, am I not right, Sister Rashida?
Yes.
Synthetic drugs based on something created from the Amazon, if you let's use the Amazon as an example, it's going to have a harsher effect on the body, the synthetic portion, because it's foreign to our bodies.
Absolutely.
Whereas something that is extracted from nature is going to have more of a positive effect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the most intriguing ingredient in food, I believe, is sugar.
Mm, it's the new cocaine.
It's sugar. Yes, sugar does have a toxin to the brain, and I have to be convinced of that. And it does. It
listen, yes, ma'am. Listen. It's the new cocaine, but if
and
you eradicate it from the diet, then you start seeing health benefits immediately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, even with the, when we were talking about the fintech, that consistent food that's fed to you, both from diet and psychological, has a lot to do with the body responding to it. Because it's just not food that sustains us. It's the cues that are around us that sustain us also. And in that, with having to be in an environment where you say your normal procedure, you get up, you take a little liquid or a little cereal or something, you take a shower, you get dressed, you go to work, your job. Now, do I give you all the intricate details between when I lift my head up off the pillow to get a drink, or is that just something that is conditional that I do? Or have you been taught to do that? Mm-hmm. So all those ramifications that you're dealing with, and that what makes you still dealing with it when you come to the point of, gee, do I really have to do this? Or is this meant for me to be? Or the body thing says the same thing to you. Okay, you're giving me that, but I don't particularly care for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get better. And this is from natural. I'm speaking from a natural substance. And then you get better. But it's hard to convince somebody else that, because that's you, and we are as different as our fingerprints. So something may work for me may not work for you. And that's how we have to acclimate to our own body chemistry and pick that. There's some that are just straight across the, flat line. It helps me, it helps you, it helps the next person. But I might need more than you need. And you might need less than the next person needs. So that's why it's imperative that we get out and learn who we are and what it takes to make this car run.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the engine that also accommodates that car. That's my closing remark.
That is so powerful, so important. When we have you back the next time, we're going to investigate more on language, brainwashing versus brainstorming, and critical thinking versus critical analysis. This is in the near future, brothers and sisters. This has been such a pleasure and an honor to have you on the show. So I think as we close on the mental health series, we're advocating to use some of the information to change the daily course of your life. Diet is going to affect both your mental health and your physical health. So there's two positive outcomes for population health to change instantly. Brothers and sisters, if you pay attention to diet, watch that poison, those toxins, because these things elevate hypertension, blood pressure in general, A1C, and once these things start going away, then we have health problems. And so go ahead and get those yearly checkups to find out where you're, and ask for copies of your blood work and start researching what that means and what those levels mean and being able
yes.
to ask the questions.
I'm just getting ready to say that. Before you start taking any type of supplement, get your blood profile. You should do that once a year anyway. It's an annual job that you should employ for your health. Get your blood profile. You need to find your D3, your D, your B levels of vitamins you're speaking of. I'm speaking of. What your LDL and CDL is. And, of course, they're going to tell you, well, ask for your sugar count, and I'm not sure what most doctors, some fill out that form completely, some I've noticed only fill out half. Some will provide you with the last two visits, some will just do yours annually. But that blood profile is very important in order for you to take your D3, your elderberry syrup, powdered vitamin C, and they have a powdered vitamin C that is more akin to a person who may have an acidic stomach, and it's called buffered C, more so than orbit C.
Mm-hmm.
And some people take black cumin seed oil. I take B12 sublingual that goes under your tongue. And research on the names of those and why I highly recommend liquid and powders is because you can take as much as or as little as needed, and it absorbs more readily in the gut.
Mm-hmm. Very important.
So it's more than just washing your hands. You have to build that immune system. And you can't take vitamins and turn around and eat Hershey's chocolate bar.
It's so true. That's full of sugar. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for being with us. This has been a wonderful service to the community. So enjoyed you today. So enjoyed you last week. This has been absolutely an honor and a privilege to have you on, and look forward to you being on in the near future. Is there a contact, if the listening audience wants to contact you, is there a email or a some type of?
This contact me is Rashida, Rashedea. MAD 1234@icloud.com.
Excellent. And if the listening audience needs to contact me, I may be contacted at Salina, SalinahMOH77@gmail.com. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent. Marad Speaks. Thank you for joining us today. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.